Welcome, everyone, to this edition of the Not So Common Podcast. I'm Pat Conchi. Returning is Super Collector, the immortal John Hancock. Welcome back, John. It's been about 10 months since I've spoken to you.
It has, and it's always a pleasure being on your wonderful show. And
wonderful.
There's not a hammer in the background this time. So
was there last time? That's right, when your game room was getting done. Wow, that was back in what, July of last year, something like that.
Yeah.
So have you done an updated I guess game room tour since the completion of the new game room?
I have done I do a lot of my video shooting in there because it's inside, and I've done an update. I've kind of on my main channel. I have a room tour. It's a small room, but it's got all my classics, pre-crash games in there.
Do you need like the Dewey Decimal System to find the games in the certain aisles?
No. No, it's not like Raiders of the Lost Ark either, where you put a box along the hallway and it just disappears.
it's been a strange year in terms of retro gaming. There's been so much that's been announced, and so much even the past few months. NES Classics returning, even though Nintendo told us that last year. Now they officially, I guess, pre-announced it again for the end of May. It'll be back in stores, which is good news. We have Atari trying again with the Atari box. There's just so much to hit upon. What is we can get to? What's been the one or two moments the past year that surprised you the most that's come about?
Surprise in not so great way. I guess Nintendo Labo was kind of out of nowhere, and when they announced that, I just was like, "What are you doing?" It's kind of like you have a really cool movie. And then the follow up is just not what anybody ever wanted.
I was surprised you took that approach to it. I did see you're taking that. You were not a fan of that. And I at the time only saw a lot of positives. Especially, you're an educator. I thought that you would have saw the benefits of it being used for STEM and for kids to learn how things are made and maybe get into engineering in a way. It's sort of a gateway tool. And you didn't see that at the time.
I guess for me, I work at a title school, no offense, but, a lot of my kids that I work with wouldn't be able to probably do it.
Okay.
I think this is really marketed. It was really marketed towards younger adults. And I see kids needing help building it. And I think that it's too complicated for kids to do on their own. And then what do you do when you're done building it? Like, and I live in Washington, so it's like rains everywhere. So where are you going to store this? Where are you going to put it? Like, I really don't like it.
Would there have been a scenario if there were smaller pieces that you would think, okay, this is something more handy? I look at it just as sort of a more complex form of Legos, where you could do what's designed for the product to do out of the box, or you can just tinker with yourself and just sort of figure things out and go off on your own creation if you have the aptitude to do that. I think it's going to rely on, obviously how old you are, how much help you have, and I guess the children's interested after a while.
Yeah, I just kind of saw it as a real kind of a disposable gimmick. I think it did some cool things, but everything from the price to, I just kind of saw it for what it was. It was some unfinished games smashed together with some cardboard that's disposable that either collectors are not going to play at all and keep in a sealed box, or people are going to mess with it once and then like lose parts, and well, it's just going to go away.
So you're taking a very bearish look at Nintendo Labo. I'm more bullish on it. I think it could be a nice sort of gateway tool for kids to learn about science potentially. Yeah. We don't know what other developers are going to get in there and do their own sort of version of it. I think it's, at the very least, it opened up the Switch to a whole avenue of educational tools and products that I don't think anyone conceived of before. And that was Nintendo. I give Nintendo credit at least for looking at that, because it's not something any other. At the time, we said this is something that Sony or Microsoft would never even think of even attempting to do at all.
I guess it's important to know where I work. So I work at a title school that has very little technology in my whole school. Like we have computers, but I have 5 computers per 20 kids in my class. And so, for me, like the whole like science, you know, thing. Like, I don't think of putting Nintendo Switches in schools. And so, like, I just come from a very different perspective on, like, you know, I could take, we could take that money and actually get, like, a, you know, a Chrome laptop, you know?
Sure.
And it would benefit our kids, you know, 10, 20 times more than a variety kit. So, I guess that, yeah, that's just, I mean, yes, I'm very, I guess I see what Nintendo was trying to do with it, but at the end of the day, I don't think it does what they think it does.
You think that there's still like a wide gap between the type of people they envision using it and the type of people or kids that actually end up using it?
Well, I think maybe in more, how can I say this? I would say maybe some schools in Seattle, or maybe some schools with, you know, that had some money, where, you know, parents could bring their Switch in and work with the teachers and do some STEM learning, I guess, that way. But I don't see an average school even considering this.
What if you're a parent that, say, you're leaning towards a Switch or have one, and you think this could be a good way to connect with your child in order to learn, put something together, build a piano, do the fishing rod, you know, do the little robot, and at the time the child can learn how this actually works, what technology is going into that. You don't see there could be a benefit to that, at least.
I think there could be a benefit, and I think it would take a really special person to do that, because most parents, and this is just from my own experience, when they find out that the robot takes 6 hours to build, they're going to say, screw that. I'm not going to do that with my kid.
You think so? You're not giving the parents enough credit?
No, I don't think, because we deal with it at our school, where the parent is like, you know, they want their kids to know technology, but they don't want to have to learn it themselves.
Is that kind of a shame?
I think it's real life. I think it is a shame. And I'm all for science and STEM learning, you know, but I think there's a disparity between what Nintendo wanted to happen with this and the reality of the matter. And so I mean, my local Walmart has them stacked. I mean, they're just sitting there.
Well, they're cheap to produce because it's just cardboard. Yeah. And people forget that when people talk about the price tag, you're also getting, it's not just that, you're also getting the educational software with it and the mini games. It's not like, okay, oh, you're getting $2 worth of cardboard. It's like, no, that's really not it. Plus, there's design, you know, development that went into making this as well, the R&D. It's all that.
Yeah, I just was not a fan. I saw it, and I just, you know, it's funny because I am a second grade teacher, but it's too hard for my second grade class for the most part, and I just have no desire to mess with it.
Maybe I think it's, I don't know, maybe it's like fourth graders, and it's like 9, 10. Once you get that, it's more accessible.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe it's that. So maybe it's a little bit beyond, like, obviously a 4 or 5 year old that can barely read enough to in order to follow the instructions and get into it. I look at it myself when I was 4 or 5. I couldn't do advanced even Lego stuff at 4 or 5. But once I got to like 8 or 9, I was okay. But not at 4 or 5, I couldn't do that stuff. It took a few years to get into it. So
you see the Honest trailers on it?
No, I didn't see that. No. I did not see
that's exactly how I feel.
Well, I think it's gonna sell okay, and I think, like I said, it really depends if Nintendo sticks with it. If they put out other supplemental packs, you know, I don't see why they wouldn't if it sells well. I think the big thing will be this holiday season. We'll see what happens. I mean, we're so early into the year. You know, we start up year 2 of Switch. It seems like it's been out longer.
Here's my honest take on it, and I know,
you've been honest.
People, well, yeah. Well, the pitchforks and knives of Switch fanboys that can't see anything negative about the console. You know, I love my Nintendo Switch, and it has its purpose, and it's good, but it's not the second coming of Christ. I'm sorry.
Wow. You know,
it's got some problems. It has some problems, and so I think the Labo was a gimmick, and people talked about it. And it kind of checked April off for Nintendo, saying, okay, we don't have to do anything for that month until we get other games out that they're rushing to get out. And they don't have to, they just, you know, April's done, and now they can talk about May. So
you think that was it? You think, like, this is the generation of the Power Pad? Because the Power Pad was always going to be a short-term product. They just needed to fill that holiday season up, have something to talk about, you know?
Yeah, and nobody else is going to duplicate it. So they can have that educational, the educational game is checked off, and if it doesn't sell, then they don't have to do it again, and nobody's going to duplicate that. And I think it's, you know, it was a conservative gamble, and they can move on if it doesn't sell.
All right. We have the slightly cynical take on the Nintendo Labo from John Hancock. And fair enough. Yeah. We'll see how it plays out later this year. If we'll see if there'll be supplemental packs or not, or see if it crashes and burns.
Did we trade places or something?
Maybe it'll be, but the Wii Fit sold tons of them. And people, I knew people that used that Wii Fit for a good 6-7 months before they got rid of it. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. I think Nintendo could, especially with the motion controls, they haven't even, and it sounds to me like there's some recent news about some potential Wii games coming to the Switch, or they're looking at that. You know, they have the motion controls built in, so I want a Wii Sports, honestly. I would totally get a Wii Sports for the Switch again, because it was fun.
Well, 1-2 Switch was sort of like their version of like the Wii Play game, I guess, where you learn how to use the console, and it's fun. It's a fun little set of mini games. I always thought that it should have been maybe not a packing game, but a budget title like $30. Then everyone would have bought it that bought a Switch. Absolutely everyone would have bought it, but not a full price game for 1-2 Switch. That was always my problem with that game. They should have said, well, we're going to price this low enough that it's going to have like a 80% attach rate to the system. Like everyone would have bought Breath of the Wild and 1-2 Switch. Now you don't hear 1-2 Switch at all, unfortunately.
Yeah. After known as 1-2 Buckle My Shoe.
1-2 Buckle My Shoe. Is that one of the games on that? I don't even know.
No, it just is like my name for it because it was so silly. One, you have to like hold a baby and the baby can't wake up. Like there's just some silliness with that game.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I guess it's a more, I guess, less crazy like WarioWare sort of game to get people into the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I can't wait for the Switch version of a WarioWare game. It's going to be nuts. I love those games.
Yeah.
Are you sad about the? I'm guessing you're sad. We all are about the. Looks like the likely end of Toys R Us, at least how we know it to be at this point.
And I have some great memories of Toys R Us. Ironically, my first Toys R Us that I visited was in Los Angeles, and so, in California. I was a kid and I didn't have a lot of toy stores around me, and I went to visit an aunt and she said, you can buy any toy in the store. And I kind of freaked out because I've never been asked that before. And I saw this entire store with toys and I got a Dinobot. I got Slag the Dinobot.
I had Slag. He was the Stegosaurus, right?
Yes.
I had him too. He's one of the couple. I had him and I had the T-Rex.
Oh, wait. Slag was the Triceratops.
Oh, no, wait, hold on. Which one? No, I had the Triceratops. I did have him. I had the Triceratops. Yeah. I'm sorry. I had the Triceratops, and I had the T-Rex.
That's right.
So you have the fond memories of picking that up and walking the aisles, obviously.
Yes, getting Sega CD games and TurboGrafx back in Redding, California. I got many, many of my games for those 16-bit era games, consoles.
We were lucky.
Toys R Us.
My Toys R Us had Turbo games, too. Like, we're the lucky ones. We're in the minority when it comes to that. You know, not every Toys R Us had them, obviously. And I don't actually remember buying... I only had a handful of Turbo games. But I do remember seeing the... I would wish the kiosk... Someone still had the kiosk with them playing on the TV. Like, the you can find the video on YouTube. Like, welcome to the TurboGrafx 16! You know, and they run through, like, 20 or 30 games.
Yeah, it's, you know, my Toys R Us had Lynx, had TurboGrafx, had Sega CD. You know, it had all the classics. And, you know, as a Lynx owner, that was one of the only places you could go for games. And so, you know, going into Toys R Us and looking at the sorry selection of Lynx games and praying to the game gods that more games would come, which never happened. So
you got that nice version of Gauntlet. At least.
Yeah.
I've been trying to beef up my small Lynx collection just because, you know, for a lot of those Atari arcade games from the mid-80s that were fantastic, those were either the only or best ports of some of those games. It's the only console port I know of, APB, for example. You know, so if you wanted to play a good version of it, that's find an arcade somewhere, or, you know, or I guess download MAME and get the ROM, or you get the Lynx. Like I mentioned, like the Gauntlet version. Even games like, what's the other one I just was looking at the other day?
Rygar Arcade?
Oh, yeah, Rygar Arcade. Is it Ninja Gaiden?
Ninja Gaiden? Ninja Gaiden the arcade?
Yes, version? That's right, Ninja Gaiden Arcade. And Ninja Gaiden 3 is on there as well, correct? It's both of them.
Yes.
Which is always weird to me how they would go from the arcade into 3. But yeah, so the Lynx is a nice little system for games like that, that for some reason never bothered to come out. I have not played Rampart on that system, but I'm sure it's a great, almost probably near perfect arcade port from based upon the other games, or close to it, you know. So yeah, I think it's a cool little system that, for a little Atari handheld because of that, you know.
Ironically enough, a good friend of mine who's a big fan of it, he kind of commented that it's actually, with Atari collectors, kind of like this kind of like abandoned land, because it's not really considered a console and it's not really a computer. And so both kind of pools of Atari fans kind of don't look at it seriously. And that actually gets less attention than like Atari 5200 even. But it's awesome. I mean, for what it offers is awesome, but it's just it's really kind of the black sheep of Atari collecting.
That's a shame. That's really a shame, because there was a time where people were sort of interested in, there was buzz when it first came out. They had a good marketing campaign. It just sort of fell by the wayside, probably because, again, if it's mostly Atari games on there, you know, most people would be like, "Eh, well, where's Mega Man? You know, where are those games?"
Yeah.
But that happened with the TurboGrafx as well. There was buzz for the first year, and after that, no one cared. Because they didn't have the support. You know, give me the system that has Street Fighter 2 on it. Oh, it's not on this then? Okay, I guess I'll just get Super Nintendo or Genesis. And that happens. It's like, where's the software at? You know, we need to draw the games first. Yeah.
And I have to say that our TurboGrafx artwork sucked.
Oh, it was atrocious.
PC Engine, just terrible. I mean, it looks like some of the artwork looks like an eighth grader drew it.
Dungeon Explorer, literally like someone in fifth grade. Dungeon Explorer. It looks terrible. Bomberman's terrible. Yes. Even the stuff for like Bonk wasn't that great. It was okay.
Yeah.
It succeeded for a short time in spite of itself. You know, maybe something like Legendary Axe was pretty good, but most of it was atrocious.
Keith Courage and Alpha Zones.
Yeah, that wasn't good. I was going to say, go back to Lynx. So I'm still amazed you can find new old stock for almost every game. Like the majority of the library, you can buy brand new for a low price, which to me is amazing. How many they produce and how many they didn't sell. I guess how many are still in a warehouse somewhere.
It's cool. There's a whole following on Atari Age where you can upgrade your screen now. The McWill.
Can you really?
You can upgrade your screen. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And there's an SD card, multi-cart that you can get.
What?
And so, you know, it's really, there's a following for it, but it's expensive, like anything, you know, to upgrade your screen stuff. But I had mine done. It's gorgeous. And there's homebrew still made for it. And, yeah, I mean, there's a hardcore following of Lynx. You know, you go on Atari Age, you go to the, you know, Lynx section, and they're having a field day. So.
And then there's the games that never came out, like Alien vs. Predator, Rolling Thunder, my all-time favorite arcade game. I think Relief Pitcher, which I loved. Mm-hmm. I loved the arcade version of that. So I think there's prototypes available online. You can download the ROMs. But I'm in for an Atari Lynx SD, like flash guard. I'm in for that.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep, and a screen upgrade. And they're both gorgeous. And they even have it where you can hook the Lynx up to a VGA monitor that's compatible. And you can play it through your TV.
Wow. Okay. Not HDMI out, though. Just a regular, like, VGA, like a...
Yes.
Like computer.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Lynx is a little late to the party, but they're getting there.
That's right.
So is the flash card actually out?
Yeah.
Well, where can you order it from?
You go on Atari Age, and there's a thread on it. Yeah, someone's making them. I don't have it on me, but it's the same guy, I do believe, it's working on the Jaguar multi-card. So,
all right. So we're gonna almost get to the day where almost every console has a multi cart, has a flash cart. We're almost there. We're close to it.
Yeah.
I don't think 2600 has it yet. Do they? Does 2600 have one?
Oh yeah.
Do they really?
Yeah. The Harmony cart. So the Harmony cart's been around for a while, and you know, SD card, kind of same thing. But the Lynx is an SD card, micro SD card. You put the game ROMs on it and. Has a menu and but yeah, Harmony Kart's been around quite a bit.
Harmony
locally
cartridge.
Too. Yeah, Harmony Kart's and there's a new one, a budget multi cart being worked on for 2600, and there's a thread on it. But yeah, it's always something, right?
Yeah, it's either that or you buy the Atari Flashback Gold with your 60 games built in, and most people that'd be good enough. you know, just to have that experience. You know, they don't necessarily have to play Beam and Eat 'em on their on their, you know, on their flash card. What do you think about what the stuff Atari's been trying to do, like the Atari box? Are you as disappointed as I am?
Oh yeah. So yeah, I've talked about it. I mean, it's kind of a joke. Kind of. You know, yeah, I'm being nice, but I mean it's
the speaker hats and everything.
Well, the Indiegogo. I mean that right there.
Their cryptocurrency
is yeah. I mean Indiegogo going that route is going to kill them. It's just dumb. It's just dumb, and you know with. You know, and they're advertising now. Ooh, Tempest 4000, and it's like it's available on other consoles. There's nothing.
Are they really? You know, I didn't see that.
Yeah, Tempest 4000. They have, you know, the Atari Vault. They're going to offer 100 classic Atari games that are on everything else.
Yes, of course,
including Steam, including Steam and Flashback consoles, and you know, between that, the Flashback and the Retron 77. There's less and less reason for anybody out there to consider getting a VCS, Atari VCS, for the price.
And now
it's just dumb.
And now we got to say, well, it's a VCS from 2018, not from 77. Unfortunately, we got to like make a distinction now.
Yes.
You know, that annoys me in and of itself. Is that now we have to like say, oh no, not the new VCS, the original, the 2600. Have you used the Retron 77? I haven't seen one in person.
So it's not out yet.
Oh, it's
so
not out. Okay.
I would like to review one, and we'll see.
It looks cute.
It's gone through some changes. I think they've taken some feedback that they got from the Retron 5. They're licensing an earlier form of Stella, and they've been pretty transparent on Atari Age, and they're really trying to work with people. It won't work with the Harmony cart, which is a multi-cart, but it takes an SD card slot, and it's going to have a bunch of options. And so I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to play homebrews. It's going to play up to 16K games out of the box, but it's going to be an open source device, which means people can modify it and hopefully offer other features. And so, you know, nothing official. Again, this is just me reading what Hyperkin has posted on Atari.
So they're not locking out, so I can just load ROMs on an SD card and I guess an emulator on there will play them.
I don't know that.
Okay.
But I don't see why not, even with some modifications.
Sure. I'm hoping that this gets unlocked or altered, that you might as well say, screw it, we'll just throw on a 7800 emulator on here or a 5200 and have it be your little Atari all-in-one. You know, console. You know what I mean? Like, there's no point of having three separate ones. No one's going to buy a separate, you know, 5200 one necessarily. You might as well make it all in one somehow. Or make an adapter for it. You know what I mean? Like, do something like that with this. I think that would be a smart move. And you'd sell so many more.
Yes, I think modding it to play 7800 would be a very nice feature. I think a lot of people are expecting that. I don't know out of the box. Again, I haven't got one. I've requested to review it.
Yeah, I'm interested. I think it's a good idea because while you're looking at, well, you can just get the Flashback, you know, HD, that might satiate you. But yeah, maybe I want to play Tax Avoiders every now and then, even though no one does. You know, but be able to put the cartridge in at least and do that. You know, I mean, because think about it. Everyone's playing the same, you know, 30 or 40 Atari games and they're calling it a night. But to be able to at least, you know, have the ability to play other ones, or like you said, play homebrews. I wonder why they won't have the multi-cart be functional, unless it is sort of like an emulator system like the, you know, Retron 5, where it has to load up the ROM, you know, pull the ROM from the cartridge. Maybe that's how it's working.
That's a hardware limitation.
Okay.
The other thing that's important to know about it is that it's going to have a quick menu screen, so it's going to be booting up within a couple seconds, and that there's customization when you boot it up. You can... there'll be some options for you to customize your own screen when you boot it up. So they're really kind of working with the public. I you know, since they have announced this product, I've been interested in seeing it evolve. It's the first, you know, clone hardware of Atari in 40 years. I mean, you'd think that, well, commercially acceptable. I guess there's FPGAs that have been made that are like $600-$700. But for, like, you know, commercially viable product, it's been 40 years and nobody's done a clone console of the Atari.
Sure. Yeah, I think FPGA will be the simplest answer in the long run to a lot of these issues, and then you won't have to deal with, you know, 15 different pieces of hardware. Speaking of that, we have the RetroBlock still potentially on the way. They might be too late to the party, though, after all these pieces of hardware are out. It really depends on what happens. But yeah, it's sort of like we're getting to the, not saturation point of the new form of old hardware, but it's all getting out there now. I mean, we'll probably have, I'd say, most systems covered within a few years. You know, we have like with the RetroBlocks and the CD, SEEDI, you have CD-based systems potentially, you know, like the PlayStation 1 and potentially, you know, Turbo CD, where you can just hook that up to an HDMI output, and as long as you have the emulator for it, you can load up your disc. You know, so we're getting to that point. I mean, we're going to get to the point where they finally unlocked the, they cracked open the Saturn, what, only a year ago? They're figuring that out. So we're getting to the point. We're going to get to that point pretty soon, which is fine for preservation. It's fine so I can continue to play these systems. But yeah, because I think the current concern is going to be 10 years from now. Yeah, finding a Sega Saturn that still works properly without having to get it, you know, modded or worked on. It could be a real concern going forward into the future.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I'm looking forward to having... I'm always all for hardware replacement because one out of one hardware is going to die. And so having these new retro consoles that play old stuff, I'm all for it as long as it's done right. And I think sometimes some longtime fans get frustrated when, you know, the company is trying to make a profit and they shave a 25-cent part off of something and it kind of ruins the experience, you know. I think a lot of people would look at at-games and get frustrated. You know, they had flashbacks for so long without a cartridge port, and now I wonder if at-games is kind of scratching their head saying, maybe we should have did that earlier.
We should have done our own Retron 77.
Yeah, you know, because I think at some point that's going to be an issue, you know, because I think the Retron 77 could possibly take the bite out of flashbacks.
Was there a flashback with the cartridge slot? One of the versions?
Okay, so no.
I thought there was an Atari release that had a cartridge slot.
There was a mod. You could do a flashback. So Kurt Vendel, who was an Atari employee, was... I do believe he engineered the Atari Flashback 2 and 2 Plus. And what he did is he left a spot on the PCB, the actual board, that you can install a cartridge. And it was not 100% compatible, but a lot of people did it. He made it to where you could install your own cartridge.
It was the Flashback 2.
Yes.
So that one, there was you can cut that baby open and get a cartridge in there somehow.
Yeah, you had to mod it. You had to buy the parts, and you had to, you know, a lot of tinkering. Not my jam.
I'm sure At Games wasn't happy with that.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. You know, I don't know when At Games took over the flashbacks, but yeah, that was, I think, before they did that.
So who manufactured that one back then? That was one of the these flashbacks have been out for what, over 10 years now? It's been a while.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mid-2000s.
Yeah. Really the first run of these sort of consoles that still continue to this day. And now we have all the, you know, all these like the Retrobit generations. Mm-hmm. And they have the follow-up one that's just coming out now. Did the follow-up come out yet? I think it came out.
Super Retrocade, yep.
Yeah.
Super Retrocade, did a review on my channel.
Which for my scenes, an improvement from what I've seen at least.
It is. There's a little bit of controversy about with that. Is so they just released a 1.1 upgrade. Now, originally, they said that you would be able to upgrade your console, and it sounds to me like you can't. And so all the people that got a 1.0 are kind of screwed.
There's no firmware
There's no firmware to update a 1.0. At least I haven't heard of one. And so, but there's a 1.1 out now, and it fixes some of the sound issues, and they've added a couple different ROMs and stuff. But on a side note, you can add ROMs to a Super Retrocade out of the box.
Oh, you can?
It's pretty cool.
It's not even locked down. You can just load up your ROMs on a SD card?
Yep, you turn it on, and then you insert the SD card, and after you have your ROMs on there, and then it pops up.
And so that's like MAME ROMs, I'm guessing.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So it becomes, so instead of buying your Xbox, original Xbox, and have it converted, you can just buy one of these and do it.
And it'll play other retro consoles too. It'll play like Game Boy. And it'll play, you know, some other retro consoles too. Everything, but it's pretty cool.
I was going to say, what is the ceiling of power for games? So can you like pull off like, I don't know, Mortal Kombat 3 on this thing? Will that play all right?
Yeah, it doesn't do 3D. It does great like late 80s, early 90s arcade games. And there's certain pockets that does better than others. Like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the X-Men arcade game, no problem. Neo Geo games. No problem.
Really? That's
Very interesting. Other than Metal Slug 5.
And then it's USB controller ports, correct?
Yes.
So then you can use whatever you want then, at least. You don't have to deal with those.
No.
No?
So there's a big issue with 1.0.
I've been following this.
That they fixed with 1.1 that fixed the controller port issue. And so there's some controller... There's limited USB controllers that work with the original release. Yeah, I know.
Why would they lock it down? Oh man, this could be my system. I can play Rolling Thunder on my TV.
I don't know. I haven't tried Rolling Thunder, but I'm pretty sure it should work.
That's very surprising. Oh, it includes the official carrying case if I buy it on Amazon. Oh, that's interesting. All right, I might have to look into that. 1.1. It has what looks like the same exact manufacturer that made the NES Classic carrying case. Like the same exact one. It looks literally the same exact one. It just looks, you know, the Retrobit symbols on there. So that's your endorsement for the Super Retrocade over the awful Retrobit generations.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like night and day. And what's cool is it has AV ports in the back, and so you can play it on a CRT.
Ooh, okay.
And you get less lag. You get it's kind of more of a genuine experience, but it's pretty awesome. I've messed around with mine quite a bit, and I like it. And there's a forum. There's some forums that are adding additional features to it. So, yeah.
Additional features in terms of future
adding ROMs and what's compatible, and making images for the ROMs. So when you boot it up, you can, you know, the menu system's a little clunky, but yeah.
There's not that many reviews on Amazon. I'm sort of surprised about that. It's only like 6, looks like at this point in time. But speaking of consoles with tons of games that we've already purchased 20 times before. So what do you think is going to happen with the NES Classic? Think they'll make enough this time, like the SNES Classic? I'm hoping that they've turned the page here. It sounds like they have, at least to me.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So they made a bajillion. They sold, 5 million SNES Classics?
You can get them regularly whenever you want, for the most part, the Super Nintendo Classic. They've done their job with that. I can order on Prime right now, it looks like.
Let's see. The question is, because you can software mod that, right? And you can put NES games on it, right?
Yeah, you can put you can put the entire library on the NES Classic.
So what I'm saying is, can you put the NES games on the SNES Classic?
No, it's just Super Nintendo, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's good. I think, you know, I'd be nice if they had like a packaging variant or maybe some different games. I think if they put different games on it, there's going to be more people who are going to buy it.
I'm not sure they want to go through that.
What I'm saying is like a packaging variant. So they can keep a lot of the same games they had on the first run, but even if they added just a couple games, because all those variation collectors are going to go out and buy it.
Oh, my mistake. You can install RetroArch on your SNES Classic, so you can play multiple systems on the SNES Classic. You can install the emulators for, it looks like, NES, Game Boy, Genesis, N64, and others. So yeah, you could. But the problem is, I think the space of those ROMs is, I mean, the NES ROMs are so tiny compared to even Super Nintendo that you won't be able to fit that many on there.
So the question is, since it's the same hardware, is there going to be, is the big demand wave gone now? Like,
I think that there'll be enough people that never got the chance to get the NES Classic that when they see it, they'll still buy it. Okay. Because they were so shorted. And that was even before they did the second run, surprisingly, in early 2017, when they said we're going to come out with, we're going to go back to the factory and do whatever, a few more. due to the demand, because they really were not prepared for the demand, because they just, I don't know what they were thinking and why there wouldn't be demand, but they honestly thought it'd be a novelty product. So the interesting thing is that the massive success of that, or demand combined with the Super Nintendo, to me, altered their decision on the Switch Online service and how they're going to be marketing retro products going forward. Mm-hmm. Which is good news to me, at least, that they're not going to go back to the well with, oh, we'll just charge you $5 for each individual ROM until the day you die on each subsequent system that comes out. So I think this is going to come out, and I think people will still be clamoring for it. Or obviously the fervor's died down from a year and a half ago, but I still think that there'll be people that are going to want to get this, and they'll be able to get it. They say it's going to be available, at least this and the Super Nintendo Classic, until the end of the year at least. So, but yeah, I think the Super Nintendo Classic you can get at your local Walmart or Target, no problem. So they fulfill the demand, they made a ton of money, and they figure, why not? You know, I don't see why. I mean, me and Ian go back and forth. He's almost adamant there'll be an N64 Classic maybe this year. And I'm like, I'm not so sure about that one, but he thinks they'll do that more sooner than later.
I'm excited about them making it, and I think that it's neat. It's a neat novelty item has spawned a whole group of other minis to come out, and it's still the standard that everybody's, you know. I would like them to fix their ridiculously short cord.
Yeah,
it'd be great to have like a deluxe package with two controllers. I'm really excited if they release extra controllers that you can actually find, because I know
you could find new old stock of the European ones for a long time on eBay, and they weren't going for that much. But if you're a collector, you want the U.S. packaging, sorry, you're out of luck. I got one in a bundle. I was from GameStop. I'm one of the three people that have the U.S. extra controller.
Yeah.
You know. We have a lot of mini stuff going on. A lot of consoles. We have the Coleco Evolved Kickstarter has already hit their goal.
Yay.
That's all you can say about that.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, they got to use that trademark or they lose it.
my only positive. Okay, there is a positive. So, first of all, once I found out that the Robotech was just a Game Boy Advance port, less excited. And the Rainbow Bright looks terrible. It does. It just looks stupid.
I wonder if that's ROM hack of Crystalis, the more I look at that.
It's just like hipster, it's like a hipster gold, I don't know. I don't like it. So, but what I do like is that maybe less people are going to pilfer original hardware to do like MAME arcade cabs.
Are people doing that? They're buying like a Galaxian and they're ripping it open. That's just, I hate destroying original hardware.
Yeah, they'll take damaged ones or ones that don't work. But yeah, I mean, at least with this now, they'll hopefully use these instead.
Sure, because the price is, well, the price is unreasonable at $70, but I guess $45 plus shipping, it's still $60 probably. This price still is bad. I'm sorry, the price is still too much for those.
Well, I think if they're smart, they should just sell the unfinished hardware. Just the case.
Just sell the molds, like the molded case.
Sell the molds to hobbyists, and people would buy them up, you know, $30, $40 bucks.
That was Mike Anthony's plan with the Chameleon. He was going to deal with Atari. I think that's probably the only money he made off that venture, was making those Jaguar cases and selling them to people that want a replacement cases.
What a mess. What a mess.
that worms its way back into the conversation, but I forgot about that.
Well, I don't ever think of Mike Kennedy, because I have my own thoughts about this. I guess I have to be careful in what I say. But my whenever I think of Coleco Chameleon, I think of Mr. Lee.
Who I've met.
Yes. So I think that whole fiasco, and I think of one person that probably was behind everything, and that's Mr. Lee.
Oh, you don't think there was a veiled plausible deniability that Mike Kennedy put himself behind on purpose? You don't think he didn't know about the fake prototypes and everything?
I don't know. What I do know is I know Mr. Lee, and he would definitely be a person that would do it.
Okay.
I don't know Kennedy enough, but what I do know. One moment.
While John has stepped away, let me tell you all about Stamps.com. These days, you can get practically everything on demand. just like this podcast. You can listen wherever you want when it's convenient for you. And Stamps.com is also convenient. I've used Stamps.com for like 5-6 years at this point to send out game consoles, DVDs, NES Punk wristbands, a certain NES guidebook on occasion even. So Stamps.com, it's the most convenient way to access all the services of the post office right from your desk. All you need is a computer and a printer, and probably ink for that printer, and you're good to go. You buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package. It's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You click, print, mail, and you're done. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. So how do you get your special not-so-common podcast offer with Stamps.com? You get a 4-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale, by going to Stamps.com, clicking on the radio microphone at the top of the page, and typing in NSC, short for not-so-common, NSC. That's Stamps.com. Click on the radio microphone, and you enter NSC. You get your 4-week trial, you get your postage from them, and you get your digital scale, so you can get going with the most convenient way for you to ship out your packages and mail. That's Stamps.com. I've used it, and it's easy, it's fast, convenient.
All right, so yeah, I, you know, going back to Mike Kennedy, I don't know him well enough, but I have had dealings with Mr. Lee, and I'll just leave it at that, saying I know enough there to know that I wonder about a lot of things.
So you're of the opinion that possibly he took Mike for a ride.
I absolutely think he took him for a ride. I'm
of the opinion that even if that happened, Mike did enough to bury himself even before that point. I'm sure of that.
Yeah. But I had enough dealings with Mr. Lee to never want to deal with Mr. Lee ever again.
Oh, sure. And sometimes, you know, maybe it's two souls finding themselves, what, two ships passing in the night, and they find themselves, and maybe they're the perfect marriage of sorts. You know, sometimes that happens too. And then it's one potential screwing over another potential. I'll just say that, you know, that can happen too. What do you think about, I remember last year we talked about the NES market peaking in summer 2016, both sort of agreeing on that the price is peaking. I'm still standing by that statement.
I think that, you know, I just formed a new collectors group on Facebook, and part of that is to just see what people are collecting out there, kind of having an ear to the ground. It helps me with kind of, you know, seeing what people are pursuing. And, you know, the NES is getting long in the tooth. And I think that with the prices being high, it's becoming old. And people are now pursuing more PlayStation, more GameCube, more N64, newer stuff. Newer, older, retro stuff, I guess.
Well, it's also all the collectors that are into NES have all the games they want to have. So, yep. I mean, I always talk about, I mean, who at this point who's into NES games doesn't have Contra anymore? Like, who's going to be actively searching for the game that hasn't come across a copy the last 8 years? So when I see a game like that drop from 45 to like $30 or less, I'm like, well, that's only natural because the demand isn't as high as what it used to be.
And at what point does
it's less than $30 actually, I think.
And what point does the emulation and the availability of playing old NES games, NES games, multiple ways, 100% accurately, affect the market? The Chinese ripoffs, the AliExpress, and versus the high price of original software, where people, more and more people say, I'll just get a Raspberry Pi, or I'll emulate it on my computer, or I'll, you know, play it 100 different ways versus getting that beat up old Contra cart.
I think that's what you're touching upon is, I think people are done with the original hardware to an extent. They don't see the need for it anymore. So if that's the case, then they can just buy, like you said, they can buy any other means of getting these games. Like you buy the NES Classic, and for most people, that's enough. Yep. To sort of satiate that desire to play some of these games. And people shift, they change, they get older, maybe they don't pursue it as much, they have less income. I mean, 10 years ago, a lot happens in 10 years in people's lives. There's you have a lot more expendable income, in your late 20s versus late 30s that I'm now on. Officially late 30s? Jesus Christ, I'm old. But but you're at a different point in your life, and your interests shift. So yes, I guess the hot collecting scene is always going to be some people in their 20s, whether it's mid to late 20s, somewhere around their early 20s, where I always looked at it as, you know, you're out of college, you got your first job, you have all this money, no kids yet, no family, and what do you spend money on? Let's buy games I played when I was like 8, you know, or 10, and let's do that. And we've seen it in waves going back to the 90s with the Atari, the you know, first run of video game collectors, then it goes to the NES, and now we're just seeing it progress. Yep. And it's only natural. And I will say this, and I keep saying this to make a point, not to scare people off, but 2000, end of 2016. No, 2017 was the first year I saw NES games being treated as Atari games, where you had dollar bins of NES games. Mm-hmm. I had never seen that before in my life, being around collecting for 20 years, seeing that at conventions, more than one. Where here's a bin of NES games that are a dollar each. Or NES games thrown in with other crappy dollar items. I never saw that before, but now I have. So I think once you reach that point, that tells you something about the amount of NES games that are out there that sellers have versus the amount of interest in getting those games. They're not equal anymore. It shifted. It went from, in like 2006, where, oh my God, all these resellers are starting to get into it because they realize people want these games. So then the prices start going up because they buy those games and hold on to them. Now they have them all. There's no one to buy them anymore. So naturally the prices start going down. And I think we're officially there now. Because when you go to the swap meet, we can talk about the amount of time I go to the swap meet. I don't go that much anymore. But yeah, you don't find the games like you used to.
No, and I think you bring up a good point. So first of all, going back to your comment about collecting, I absolutely agree with that. You know, a lot of my friends that are my same age have everything they want. They talk about it, yeah, you know, have downsized once, twice, multiple times. And getting back to the product, yeah, I don't, you know, the physical stuff that we grew up with is in collectors' hands, resellers' hands, and it's just you don't find it anymore. And actually, that's a big problem for people with game stores because the foot traffic, I think, in the next 10, 15 years is going to shrink to nothing.
Is that because people don't value the physical media itself anymore, part of it?
I think part of it, that, and it's just being gulped up faster. You know, once the dollar bills started appearing for games, you know, first it was Atari, and then Nintendo, and then, you know, fast forward. And it's still the word, you know, there's still a question mark of whether disc-based stuff will be collected like cartridge-based stuff. But I think that physical media is going away in general. Less of it is going to be found. I'm not saying like 10, 15 years at yard sales. And then what happens to retro game stores when less foot traffic comes in with physical media?
They either
can they survive?
Diversify or they close up shop. I mean, that's really your options. I mean,
we're starting to see in the Northwest where a couple stores have already closed this year.
Really?
So, yeah.
Which one? I mean, if you don't want to say.
GameStar. Some GameStar stores in Portland.
Oh, I heard they closed about 6 of the GameStars, correct?
Yeah.
So they had about 18 stores or 20 or something like that at their peak, and they contracted. They closed some stores.
Yeah. You know, and I think that I think there's still a big question mark. Have we peaked, or is this just a shift? And at what point does people that don't grow up with physical media affect the market? Mm-hmm. Where, and then I think Nintendo's brilliant doing the NES Classic. And so, you know, at what point does that affect the collecting market as well? Where instead of getting original hardware and original games, I'm going to get something made by the company that plays the games, that's cute, and that's called good.
And it scratches that itch.
Yes.
I always look at what was the game Ian said that shocked him? Earthbound, that he saw none of them sell at the last Portland. He said, I looked around. I'm looking at price charting. It's not 190. It's less than that, Earthbound. I think it's like 150. But that was a $275 game like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And so it lost half its value, 50%. It drops. Because people realize that, okay, I can play as other means. Why do I have to buy the original cartridge? Yeah, it is $150 on price chart. I was looking at the wrong thing. $150. And people used to sell at the, you know, try to get them at the swap meet for like $250 to try to sell it at the swap meet, that game. And yeah, I think there's going to be a shift in attitude. There might be a shift in even maybe long term with consumerism and, I don't know, your carbon footprint or what have you. I don't know. But if that happens, then if people want to accumulate all this stuff, I mean, I moved into my new place and I still have too much stuff, even in a bigger area. So I'm like, okay, enough's enough. Is it worth it to store the stuff in my garage and never look at it or get rid of it? And that's
I agree, and that's where I'm getting to.
I
agree with the consumerism statement. I think that there's a generation, you know, millennials and younger, that, you know, they can't afford what the previous generations have had, especially boomer generation, this disposable income. Even Gen X, you know, having this crazy physical media man cave, I think that younger generations look at that and say, that's not what I want,
mm-hmm.
you know, and have opinions of it and more of a minimalist approach. And I think that could really affect collecting. And I think, you know, going back to, you know, previous thing that I said on podcasts, there'll still be people out there doing it. You know, I may be one of those people like the old train people. You know,
I loved when you brought up that metaphor because I've been using it the past year, but it's perfect.
Yeah, you know that, like, you know, there's still going to be people out there that
crazy
that,
loons like us.
Yeah,
yes.
that are into the, you know, the retro gaming and the physical media, and they'll have shows. It just is not going to be as big or popular, and it's just going to die down. We'll see. I see retro collecting being more fractured too. I see that it's you know, you go to shows now and there's more picked over product and it's kind of all over the place. I think you're going to see more of that as time goes on, as games trade hands, and you're going to see more of it.
Are you talking about just when you go to a game like a show with retro games, you're not going to find desirable products anymore, or it's just all the trash out there? Everyone wants their 20 copies of Base Loaded 2. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I think it's going to just be more leftovers.
I think it already is that to a lot of these shows. I think it is.
But it's going to be more an issue. Now, not talking about big shows like PRGE, where they have everything.
Mm-hmm.
Price is a bigger issue there. But for smaller shows, you're going to see, I think, more picked over product, more leftovers, more, you know, less people coming to shows and being disappointed, walking away, kind of wanting a specific game and not being able to find it.
That's very interesting. I guess because there's only so many copies of like Zombie Ate My Neighbors for Super Nintendo, if you're looking for it, versus, you know, Madden 95.
Yeah, and I think the common game consoles are going to be fine because everybody's going to bring those to the shows. But, like, say you're into Lynx. You may go to a smaller show and be very disappointed because you're going to search the entire trade floor and you're not going to find any Lynx.
There's usually two people that have Lynx games at every convention.
Yes.
But you can always buy the brand new ones on eBay for $10. So
that's true.
You're fine there. You touched on so many things I wanted to talk about. But going back to collections in the future, I mean, we talked about it in the podcast. I think I released a video today about there's a gigantic in-person auction coming up for a 46-year-old's collection.
Yeah, I know the guy.
Oh, you know the guy. Okay. Oh, yeah.
So he's a guy on Atari Age.
Okay.
And he was – I don't think he was working for At Games. He was a spokesperson or, you know, he was a nice man, huge collection, very nice, very professional, and, you know, yeah, and so he's auctioning his collection off. Crazy collection.
A lot of old PC stuff, 90s and 80s, yeah. From what I saw. There, even some Neo Geo stuff in there, some TurboGrafx stuff in there, Super FX. Mm-hmm. Not many NES games from what I saw, at least.
No, it's definitely a unique collection.
Yeah.
He had, what, 3 Imagination Machines? Or
did
something
he really?
Crazy. Yeah, something crazy.
I owned one. One of my biggest regrets is having one of those and selling it in, like, 2004. I had an Imagination Machine with the original, like, shipping box, all the software for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I think it ended up at some museum in Germany. Some, like, computer museum got it. They only made, like, 1,000 of those, right? They didn't make that many of them.
I don't know the numbers. Now, I scored one. A guy found one at a yard sale in Oregon and paid me. I paid him an affordable price, and it works. It's beat up a little bit, but it works. So
this one.
I booted it up with the basic cart. So it has the basic cart, has the hookups, has the power supply, and it still works. It's not in the best shape, but I got it pretty cheap.
This is one of my biggest regrets, because back in 2004, I wasn't like now, let's collect everything, let's be a hoarder. Yeah, I had it. My cousin got it from his neighbor, gave it to me, and I was looking at it. I mean, it had everything. It had like all the financial software, the word processor. It had some games.
Wow.
Had the original shipping box. It had like the original receipt with it. And I was just like, what the hell? I mean, even, okay, what would I do with it today, even, if I still had it, honestly? It's so big.
In a box.
It being the gigantic shipping box, whatever, like the plain brown box, whatever it came in, I couldn't put it out anywhere. It's gigantic, the thing. It's like an oversized printer with the APF 1000 stuck in the middle of it, you know. But someone went to, I think, like I said, went to like some sort of computer museum, went to Europe. I think went overseas to Europe.
Awesome.
So they're going to do more with it than me. I think I read somewhere they either made like less than 1,000 or barely 1,000, because who the hell would have bought that? No one bought the APF 1000. I was lucky enough to find one in the box. I don't think I've ever seen another one in the box besides mine. You know, it's like, no one made them. There was like, they didn't make any of those, you know?
Baseball game's pretty good for it, too.
Is it really? The baseball game?
Yeah.
I mean, all I remember is the creaky controller on it. It's like creaky, creaky.
Controller's terrible. The baseball game's pretty good.
Yeah, I think I might have like 6 to 10 pieces of software for it, like poker and backgammon on it.
Yeah.
Like the very basic thing. But okay, so this is a guy you know. He's 46. He's been collecting for years. He's done books. He's into this. He's been on the preservation side. And even he's like, okay, I think I'm done. This is the end of my journey with this stuff.
Yeah, I think that a lot of collectors are hitting that where either they're not collecting what they used to, or they're ready to downsize. And you brought it up earlier in this discussion. You hit your 40s. And I'm there. I mean, that's why I want my games to be part of a museum, because it's taking up a lot of space in my house.
Sure.
And, you know, at some point, you have to decide, what am I wanting to do with my collection? Am I playing all my collection? Can this go somewhere else and be better served? You know, I think at some point, any collector needs to look at their collection and ask that question.
Oh, absolutely. You know? But I think I'd be very cautious if you're opening up your own regional museum or your own museum with your own stuff. Absolutely. But that was a disagreement I had with Chris Kohler, where Chris is like, yeah, museums will take your stuff. I'm like, they're not going to take everything. Like, there's only so many museums are going to take it. I don't think any old museum is going to want someone's entire Sega Genesis library. What the hell are they going to do with that? They might take certain pieces, you know, and have that on display 50 years from now. Like, here's a Sega Genesis set up with like 20 popular games. But they're not going to need an entire library of a console. I think people are in for a rude awakening. That's one thing that Chris Cole did agree upon. It's like, if you're going to sell your games, you better sell them now. This is the most of these libraries are ever going to be for these consoles. And 10 years from now, they won't be nearly what you think they're going to be. You're not going to be able to, you know, retire on some of these collections like you thought you would like a few years ago. I think collectors or people that get into it the past 3-4 years, speculators, they're going to be in for a big rude awakening. I think some have already started the realizing. I know some people already started to downsize. Your friend here is getting rid of his collection, and I think it's going to follow suit. It may not be a domino effect, but it's. I think it'll be a regular flow once we get into the 2020s. It's going to be a regular flow. It's going to happen more and more.
Well, and I think there'll be people jumping in, too, that'll... I think initially there'll be people that will be buying it up. And I think it's just going to be a gradual change. And I think collecting in general is just going to be changing. And I think the question is, nothing stays popular forever. You know, we've had this great wave of video game nostalgia in the last, you know, I would say game shows have been around. You know, late 90s was, you know, the World of Atari, the Classic Gaming Expo, the first Classic Gaming Expo in Vegas. And since then, it's just gotten bigger, and now there's more and more places doing their own regional shows.
There's about 12 to 15 retro game conventions in the U.S. every year, something like that.
And I know that you know that, because you go to them.
I go to some of them, yeah.
And you know, and there's pros and cons about it kind of spreading, but yeah, now the question is, how long is it going to last, and where does it go from here? It's a crazy market right now. I'm a good friend that's a game store owner, and I talk to him all the time, and he thinks this could be it right now.
right now, like, this is the peak, and from now it's just less and less interest, less people coming in, less people buying that original Super Nintendo console, unless the original games. I don't entirely disagree. I think it might have to, they might have to follow the GameStop model of diversifying their stock. And like I said, I think something like Portland Retro Gaming Expo will always be around, but you already see it shifting to more of a celebration of the culture of retro games versus the physical media themselves. I think it's going to be more focused on like the arcade, maybe even stuff that people want to visit, but not necessarily own, like the setup of consoles. It'd be cool to play it for a weekend, but I don't need to own 60 different consoles. You know, I don't need to have all of that in my house. I at least learn about it. I know it exists, but that's okay. You can keep it here, or I can come visit it once or twice a year. Yeah, but
yes, and I think that's where a museum model, and again, you know, this is something that I'm going to attack and address, hopefully, in the upcoming years. Mm-hmm. And I think that people want to visit game stuff, but don't necessarily want to own it. And even if, they, like you said, they saw it, great. And, you know, there's a lot of things to be addressed, but, you know, I think the museum model for certain games and not even having everything. I think you just need a fun experience, and I think that's going to be sought after. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a bunch of video game history museum sort of types of places throughout the U.S. Maybe that's the future of my collection as I stare at my M82, or is that the M8 in the shrink wrap still that I used to ship it. But anyway, Mike, John, you should help me do my game room. It's still a mess here. I still got to decide. What I'm doing is I'm keeping the games out that I have shelf space for, then deciding, okay, if I don't have room for 70 Sega Genesis games, I decide which 77 Sega Genesis games go into storage. I think that's the best way to do it. Keep out the ones I might actually consider playing at one day. And that's a big leap for me versus having everything out. Let's curate as I stare at my... Well, Sega Master System is only 114 games, so I can look at them all besides... Oh, I got Rampart, the European one, over there. By the way, I'm done with my Master System. I got that Buster Douglas manual, finally.
Oh, congratulations.
So I feel empty. And I completed my... I think you probably know it, or maybe not. I completed the NES. That's done. That's done, NES. Except for, like, five manuals. I'm not going for all the boxes, but I think I'm missing, like, five manuals, and that's it.
So yeah, I'm getting down to the nitty-gritty for my NES collection, and so I'm down to 25 boxes.
Okay.
And
I have a couple that you need, by the way.
I know.
I have like three or four, I think I told a mutual friend. I was like, oh, I have that. How did I get that?
Yeah, I have to say that, and I also just got donated a Mr. Gimmick complete.
Someone donated that?
Yeah.
Was that a cool grand or $800, something like that?
Yeah, and I watched your video on it. It did such a good job doing that.
Do you know I edited that the day before that Portland Retro Gaming Expo in 2011?
Oh, wow.
I had such a manic energy when I was younger. I'd say I really didn't start feeling old until like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. I could do feats that I could not do anymore. It was nuts. But yeah, I edited that 18-minute video in 24 hours and got my ass on that plane to that tiny... My first Portland Retro Gaming Expo, where I sweated my ass off. I had a lot of fun in that parking garage, underneath that parking garage. That was such a weird time because that was like more the shift towards what we are now. But it was interesting because Portland was always like the sort of the forefront of where the retro gaming scene was. And I was like, wow, there's so many people interested in retro games here and really odd stuff that I'm into. Like, I had to load up, like, buy my Super Batter Up in the box there that, you know what I mean? Like, no one else cared about that sort of stuff. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is the mecca of retro gaming. But sorry, I was interrupting you. So you're getting down to the 20 boxes of NES.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of motivated to complete it because I might as well announce it here is that my NES collection is going to be on at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo this year.
Hey, that's great. That's fantastic. So you're going to have every single NES game out?
Well, I think space is an issue, and that still needs to be discussed. But at least a licensed NES set will be on display. And so that's kind of why I'm pursuing my final 25 boxes.
That's cool, though. That's very cool. Yeah. Do you think I should partner up, bring out a couple of rare pieces, bring out the NWC or something to go along with that?
Yeah. I mean, Rick Weiss is kind of hidden this. This is kind of his brainchild. And, you know, he wanted to he wanted to have Atari displayed, but then, you know, he's like, it's time for Nintendo.
They had Atari last year, though. That was a beautiful display. Yes. They had that.
That's Rick's,
beautiful.
Rick's collection.
Yeah. Yeah.
With, you know, and so we're going to take that same display and put the licensed NES set.
Boxed or just cartridge?
Boxed. So it'll be my collection, yes.
So all in box protectors and little stands and stuff?
All, most of my collection with a couple probably upgrades. I'm working out a deal right now to get my boxed little Samson. So I had a cart with paint splat, but I finally got it for $5. And so, yeah.
Someone took a paintbrush and just hit it.
It's on there and it's staying on there.
Wait,
so
maybe we can work out a trade for the few boxes that I have. Well, complete in box ones that I have. I'm not sure I can piece out just a Kid Clown box and have an extra cart and manual. I'm not sure even how I got that complete box. Now I think about it. Where did I get that? I can't remember how I got some of these, but when I got them, they weren't that much money. That's for sure.
Yeah, but that's one I'm missing, as you know.
As I know a few others. A couple kind of surprised me because they weren't to me that hard to get. And I was like, oh, you don't have that one. I was like, oh, interesting.
I'm missing Terminator. You know, for some reason, I just passed that up. You know, it's just
never got it.
Yeah, I never got it. You know, missing some other silly stuff.
Maybe shouldn't say it on here. Everyone's going to get it now. But quick, buy it while we're talking. What's Terminator complete in box? Oh, it goes for
not too bad.
Buy it now, 105. Well, I guess it's uncommon.
That's not bad.
It's not bad.
That's not bad. That's not too bad.
It's not too terrible. No. Terminator 2, that's one that's really cheap. You can find. Yeah, you don't see Terminator 2 much, the original.
No.
It's interesting, they both came out at roughly the same time. That's right. I wish I had an NES app open. I can really see that. I'm too lazy to access that. What do you think? So you're going to have it on display. All right, I'll think about taking it. I mean, honestly, I have like the NWCs. I'm not bragging, but they're in a fucking bank vault. And the only time they ever come out is when I show them off at a convention. At this point, like SoCal, you show them off and have an armed guard nearby, and you can, you know, and it's fine, you know. But otherwise, there's no point for me having them at this point, besides entertaining some really interesting offers. But that's really it.
Yeah, yeah, and you could talk to Rick Weiss; would probably be the contact for that. But he asked me, "Hey, would you mind? You know, so I'm taking off work to box it up and to, you know, set it up, and it'll be a cool video, and so I'll be able to, you know, have a video about it for people that can't come, but of course. But it's going to be nice. It'll be nice to have it on display like that, because that's really what I want to, you know, that's my ideas of really promoting a local museum, is having
that's
something
a start.
Like that.
Yeah, it's a start of it, for sure.
It's a start.
Maybe we can trade for maybe the few Turbo CD games I still need. Maybe we can trade that. Oh my God, the Kid Clown go up in value. Wow. Remember, that was a $20 game. Oh, my God.
Not now.
Well, hopefully some of that stuff dies down, too. But it seems like some of these NES games, like Little Samson, never kept going up. That tapered off a little bit. But it seems like these ones that people discovered were probably, to me, just as rare, if not rare. People are now, wow, Kid Clown, that's just as hard to find as Little Samson, if not more so. You know, I'm actually going to downgrade Little Samson's rarity on the third print run of my book from rare to very uncommon. Because originally I had it at that, and I really think it's not actually rare. Little Samson. It's just very desired, which is not rare.
It's very desired. Mm-hmm.
So I think I might just go very uncommon with that. Something like Kid Clown is to me just as hard to find, you know, or even a game like Chiller. You know, you don't come across that just, you know, just at the flea market. It's I know. Like, for example, I know someone who found a Little Samson Emmanuel at the flea market. You know, I don't think I found a Chiller. I did find a Kid Clown manual at the flea market, though.
Wow.
That was weird. That's a whole other story. Wow. I don't know. I forget how I found it, what I found it with, but it was like another game that had the Kid Clown manual. I was like, okay, I'll just buy the manual for a buck. That's how I got my manual back in probably like 2010, before it was really worth that much. What do you think of, man, so many things that came up. We got the Ready Player One, and then the Adventure Cart went up in value a little bit, probably died back down again.
It'll be interesting to see what the Retron 77, how that plays out with people collecting Atari. Do people care, or is it just going to be the same 20 Atari carts that sit in a bin at any common store or retro game show? They're still going to just collect dust.
At Classic Game Fest, once I went to the first time last year, it was a very well run show in Austin, Texas. There was, I think, the people that run it, they had the game store. They had, I think I've told the story before, They had about four boxes about 3.5 to 4 feet deep and about 3.5 feet wide, 4 to 5 boxes of those filled with 2600 Atari computer and 5200 games, all for $1 each. We were probably talking 2000 Atari games, at least 1500, just wow. Thrown in these bins. Like, it was all these 8-foot tables, just like all you can walk across and go through these boxes, $1 each. So I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. I think you're going to get the hardcore 2600 people like Mike Matei that love the 2600. They're going to go out and grab this Retron 77 in a heartbeat. But I don't know if you'd be able to market that to a new audience. You might have to go back and market to like the 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds that had the 2600 40 years ago, already. Yeah. And they might be into it or want to get it. But again, they might be okay with the flashback and be like, okay, this is good enough for me. Like the same way the NES Classic is good enough for most people that might have had an NES and don't want to deal with having this hardware thing again. Who knows? It's all about the people that want to take the time to find the old software, clean it, and then hook it up to the TV. But at least it's HDMI, it'll be easier, right?
One thing about Atari carts is they're indestructible, kind of like NES carts, and that they just kind of, unless you throw them out, they just kind of hang out still. And they exchange hands, and they get a little bit faded. And, I wonder, and, I don't think it's going to be some huge, huge deal, but I think it might, there might be a market for, the top 20 playable Atari games that, instead of selling for $1, they might sell now for $2.
I was waiting for you to say even $5. They might sell for $2. We might, you might blow the roof off the market.
Yeah.
You might be able to get, you might be able to get,
Pitfall. Like
Pitfall or Space Invaders or,
What's
my favorite one? The Activision one. I always forget the name because I'm an idiot. The one with the cops and robbers. Keystone Capers.
Keystone Capers.
That's like one of my favorite Atari games. Or
Gary Kitchen.
That's right. Or a game like Heroes, kind of hard to find. So that one always has value to it. They didn't make a huge amount of those, but Chase the Chuck Wagon. People want to play that one. did you have any opinions on the new WADA grading service that was announced?
Okay, so I think it's a better service.
Absolutely.
And I don't have any ill will towards it. Again, it's kind of a wait and see. I do have an opinion of it, but it's not. I think the people running it are smart. I think they're doing it better. My concern is, has the damage already been done?
To the market, you mean?
Yeah, to the sealed gamers market, has the VG sealed coffin service that came in.
It's the coffin service.
Yeah, the sealed coffin surface that came in. Has it killed the market? Is there a market left for WADA to come in? And is there enough people to make it profitable for them? Or is it damage done?
Well, there's definitely not enough sealed collectors. I mean, there's not any new sealed collectors that I know about that are getting into sealed collecting. I think right now is the most sealed collectors you're ever going to have, for this old stuff. I don't think that's ever going to – you're not going to have an 8-year-old kid saying, you know what, I want to buy – not just buy old-ass games, but I want them sealed in cellophane. I just don't understand that. I don't think that's ever going to happen. So you're right. It might be that the market's already saturated and most of the games that are going to be sealed are already sealed.
The problem is that the prices are too high. So yeah, this service is targeting those higher marketed games, but the problem is are less people buying stuff because the prices are too high, and so are less people going to use the service because the market is at its peak and it's only going down now.
I don't like the fact that they're going to be grading some loose cartridges. I think that's unnecessary. I think that is dangerous. And that takes, because the argument before was like, well, sealed games aren't getting played anyway, but cartridges are getting played. So now they're going to take some of those out of the pool. And that may not matter for, Super Mario Brothers 3, but that's going to matter for Little Samson or Kid Clown. If you're not content as a seller to get your $300 for your kid cloud, but all of a sudden you're going to take that out of circulation now and not have it playable, and now you want to charge $500 for it because you got it coffined or entombed, as you would say. That is, to me, and I said that on Nintendo Watch, I said, I don't agree with that at all. That is dangerous once you cross that sort of bridge.
Well, and the other thing, too, is how I guess the question mark is, how many people have to use a service for them to be profitable? What is their, do they have realistic expectations of how many people are going to use the service? Or are they just expecting a couple whales? I hate calling them that, but expecting just a couple whales to really use the service a lot to keep them afloat.
It might be people just grade new games. There's people that will grade new games, you know, just to grade a Wii U game or grade a, you know, I guess you can grade a Switch game. I haven't seen it yet. I'm sure people have graded Breath of the Wild. So, I mean, you're always going to have people doing that. So in terms of profitability, I don't know. You know, it's as long as you can make an acrylic case, that's 90%, you're 90% there. As long as you have that ability, then it's just having a, you know, competent graders and having a nice system and having, in this case, good transparency in terms of, you know, what do these grades actually mean and who's grading them, which is always my concern with VGA, was we don't know what the criteria are and we don't know who's doing it. That was always the big thing about it. We don't know if they're even qualified to know. And you always had naysayers and Nintendo Age going, well, no, it's the best we got. And now some of those naysayers are now going into WADA because they realize, no, that maybe that wasn't the best thing. You know, maybe then it, I'm going down a bad train of thought. I won't speculate on motives. But yeah, on the surface, though, you're right. This looks better. It looks better than what was there before.
It looks better. You know, I wish them the luck. I'm probably still not going to use it because I'm not a sealed game collector.
No, the only time I ever got cases, I did get cases for my NWC cards. I did, because that makes sense to do that. The cases themselves are fine, but I can take them out of the cases, so that's good.
Yeah.
I don't need them entombed. They're still just about airtight, having them closed, and they block UV rays. They're coated, so it's fine. Well, now they're in a bank vault, so they're really coated from the UV sun. they're coated from everything there. But, yeah, I think it's an interesting time to be a retro gamer, absolutely. There's documentaries coming out now, left and right. Not left and right, but they're coming out. I'm helping with one that hopefully will be out by the end of the year. We'll see what happens with the stores going forward. We might have hit the peak in terms of retro gaming stores. I mean, I knew someone that wanted to open a retro gaming store. I talked him out of it because I said, listen, it's very hard to get into. Even if I helped you by giving you like half of my collection to start, doesn't mean the store's going to even be profitable for a year or two. You got to train employees. It's very specialized. And I think we're at the peak interest, like we spoke about. It's hard. It's hard work to get into that sort of venture at this point in time.
Totally agree. I mean, I think that it's just moving on to something else. And it's only time's going to tell what that is. Does it mean that people are going to start pursuing Xbox and GameCube collecting and PS2? And is that going to blow up? And is that going to be the future of retro collecting? I don't know. Disc based stuff is just on a whole, in my opinion, a whole other level.
It is, and to me, my thought was always that I don't think you have the affinity for those consoles to the same way. Like, I don't think you're. I'd be shocked if you ever have a bunch of people that become like PS2 completionists and go for the whole library or original Xbox or Xbox 360. Versus those people that say, okay, I'll just collect those cool games or the subset of games that I like. I may not want to collect the 2,000-plus PlayStation 2 games. What's the point? Plus, there's a huge amount of room with those cases. That, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if there's going to be the same affinity or love for those more, I guess, corporate-sounding or looking systems versus, you know, everyone is lovey-dovey NES. It's like Disney. You know, that's why I always think, like, you know, you may not have a lot of Wii collectors out there, you know, but hey, you know, you'll have some people into it just because it's Nintendo still. But I think as you get further on in the generations, I think it's gonna be less and less as we go. I think the peak is, we've hit the peak in terms of what systems are quote unquote collectible, but we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we'll get a bunch of 360 collectors in 10 years. I don't know.
I've seen, you know, opening up my new Facebook group for collectors, the Immortal John Hancock collectors group. I have found some people are pursuing those disc-based collections, those huge collections. Now, I have no desire to get a PS2 collection just because, A, it's space, and, B, I think PS2 is going to be more desirable desirable on a, like a subset level, like all the fighters or all the RPGs, kind of like PlayStation.
All the Atlas games, something like that.
I actually am interested in probably at some point getting all the greatest hits games. And don't ask me why.
All the reissues?
Yeah. I'm a huge greatest hits collector, and just because there's less people doing that. So, yeah.
And they're all $1.50 if you can find them.
Yeah.
Get all the Super Nintendo ones that you can still find brand new sealed for $5. All those shipping boxes of F-Zero and in Super Mario World, I think, right? Is that the ones they had? Or Super Mario All-Stars, I forget. Super Star Wars, that was the one you can probably still find up to a few years ago for like $10 sealed. GoldenEye and Perfect Dark and whatever else. That was Perfect Dark one? I forget.
But Perfect Dark 4.
N64, was that ever a million seller? It was.
Oh, yeah.
So you're into that. You're the crazy guy into those. Super Mario Kart.
Perfect Dark. I don't know if Perfect Dark was. I don't know if Perfect Dark had a million seller on the actual box, but I know that was re-released for $10. So, yes, all that stuff. I love collecting that stuff. Don't ask me why. It started with Genesis. Oh no, actually Atari. The gray boxes, the silly black and white. You know, not the black and gray and white. Atari generic boxes, late 80s, after Nintendo was released. You know, Atari was so cheap, they didn't even put color on their box.
You know, I've seen a couple of those in person. I'm guessing those are pretty hard to find.
Yeah, some of them are really hard to find. I love collecting all that stuff. And so I get excited.
They must have had a bunch of, like, centipedes left in the factory and just said, okay, just throw them in shitty boxes.
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of it had to do with the 7800 shells. Because a lot of those late-release ones have the same shells as 7800, which, you know, sold terrible. And so they just, you know, repackaged the stuff. And they were still selling the 2600 with a junior. And so they just, you know...
$150.
Just repackaged it. And, you know, they had it. And so why not?
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, that's I should have picked some of those up in the late 80s in the dollar bin when they were around at that point. Like, what was one? Here's one. Super Football?
Yeah.
That was a late release?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm just looking at eBay randomly trying to find them. That was like the reddish, dark reddish colored box for that.
Look up Real Sports Volleyball, gray box. Real Sports Volleyball is one. It's pretty cheap.
I'm thinking of the Intellivision game was the last release that's worth a lot. Not that one.
Yeah, not that one. Yeah. So this one is, you know, there's a sunset in the background and they're bouncing it's a cheap, fun Atari 2600 game, and it was sold in a gray box.
I see the silver box one. You're saying there's a gray box one.
Well, gray, silver, but it. Oh
no,
color
no!
On the
I
box.
Found it here. Oh, I found one. You can get it $8. Factory sealed. Oh, it's a cheap box. Oh, is it cheap? It says 1982, but you're saying that was the original release. This was a re-release.
Yeah.
Oh, it's in like six languages.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1988. Wow. I might just buy it for the hell of it because it looks so. Yes, you're right. It's no color on it. That is hysterical. the last hurrah for the original VCS after 10 years. They're like, all right, we're done. Just throw them out there. Put them on the shelf for $5. We have old stock. We got to get rid of it. We can't bulldoze these as well. There's no more landfill space.
Yeah.
So you're saying this is normally a hard-to-find box, though?
Not that one, but there's other ones that aren't. Like Sword Quest. One of the Sword Quests is pretty tough to get in the gray box. And there's a couple others that are pretty tough to get.
Wow.
And there's a list on Atari Age that someone has compiled. And yeah, it's cool. There's some neat stuff.
Home run. There's one home run I see. Volleyball. Very interesting. All right. I'm never going to get into Atari variant collecting. That I know. You know.
That's a rabbit hole.
The only thing I've maybe found is like when I saw some weird telegames ones I knew were hard to find, I picked them up for cheap. I was like, oh, I have a bunch of box telegame stuff, like educational games. Like that's probably... not common, you know. So I picked up some. I realized that these are not easy to find. Some of these telegames variants, you know, let alone like the Superman one you never see. They must have made like four of. But anyway, well, so what's going on in the future? What do you got lined up?
Channel or just in general? Like
both.
Okay, well, I got a bunch of trips planned with the family this summer.
Oh, nice!
And so I'm excited about that. Doing some trips. Going to go to California and hang out family. And so channel, I got some random weird stuff, you know. You know, half the time when I do a channel, do a video, it's like I look in the garage, okay, what have I not covered on my channel? And I just pull it out and just cover it. Or, you know, okay, I haven't done this or I haven't done that. Sometimes I've gotten really excited about just testing old hardware. Like I haven't tested something in a long time. And so I'll just take something out of my collection and just see on camera if it still works. And so I have some fun with that. Like to do some 3DO, CDI, some 90s stuff. Just stuff that's been in my game room too long. I'd like to test it and talk about it.
Very nice.
Going to do the Seattle Retro Gaming Expo. That's in June. The Vancouver Retro Gaming Expo. Going to be hitting some expos. I'm going to New York this year and for the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo.
What? So that's, I think I was invited to that one year. When is that one at?
Oh, geez, they're going to get mad at me not saying the exact date. Do you believe July 21st?
Okay.
No, that is not the date. Gosh. Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. I don't remember the date.
I'll look it up for you. I'll look
I'm
it up
so
for
sorry
you.
About
That's
that.
Okay. Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. Let's see. Are you going to go to the Missouri Game Con? That one?
I got invited, but I'm doing a family vacation, and I can't go.
So the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo, if that's the one,
yes,
is in August,
Garden City.
August 11th and 12th. I think that's the same.
Okay, August.
I think that's around the same time as GameStar 81's one.
Yes.
So
he asked me to come to that, and he asked me to come to that a week after they did.
Oh,
and
Jesus!
So
it's a
I
bad
was just
timing.
Like, yeah, and so, you know, I want to come, you know, of course to go to New York. I want to check it out. New game show, new grounds. But, yeah, John's a friend of mine, and I definitely want to go to Game On. So I'm fingers crossed that they don't conflict next year because I really want to go see John's show. He invited me, and I couldn't go. I felt really bad.
It's a well-run show. I love it because it's so it's the closest show to me. It's even closer than the one in Arizona in terms of travel time. It's like a 45-minute flight. So it's like, yay, close show because all these other shows are hours and hours away on a plane. Let's see. And the Missouri Game Con is, when is that one?
August 3rd.
Maybe I'll make it out to that one time. I think they wanted me to go last year, but I think that was conflicting with another one. Could have been Gamesters as well last year. I think it could have been conflicting or there was some other event I was going to. I couldn't make it
out.
Yeah,
I wanted to go to that too. And so just another one. It's just, you know, I'm a teacher and so my summer is like, it's sacred. You know, and I have my family, and I have a couple trips planned. But, yeah, going to Canada, Vancouver Retro Gaming Expo, Seattle's. And then there's a small little show in Corvallis, and it's 64 bits or less. It's not even a con. It's essentially
it's a meetup.
Beer. No, it's beer. They've done it for, like, three or four years. And it's 64 bits or less in Corvallis. And they changed the day of the show because I couldn't come. And
wow.
They're going to have me come out, and it's essentially beer and video games, and get this, it's outside. And so I asked them, like, what happens if it rains? And they're like, it shouldn't rain.
It shouldn't rain.
Or well, they'll adjust it, but yeah, it's like a little game show outside, and it's beer and video games.
That's fantastic.
I'm excited about going, so yeah.
Well, we're definitely going to run into each other later this year at some convention. If not, I'll see you definitely at Portland in your glorious NES set. And we're going to talk about, I'm not going to hold you over a barrel for the last game's box you need, but we'll work something out maybe. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
All right. And everyone can find you where on Twitter and on YouTube?
Look up the Immortal John Hancock. And so the link's SWLovinist on Twitter. And so that's how you find me.
All right, John. We'll talk again sometime. Hopefully not 10 months. We'll have you back on. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, Pat.
Do me a favor. Check out sponsor Dollar Shave Club. Right now, you can go to dollarshaveclub.com/Pat. You can check out the executive razor for only $1 with free shipping. $1. You get a 6-blade razor right here. 6 blades on that bad boy. You get 4 replaceable cartridges for the razor. There's also the Humble Twin on there, and they have other razors available, plus they have all your needs. They have for the bathroom, and they got One Wipe Charlies, they got shampoos, they got conditioners, they got stuff for your beard, they got the butters, they got everything. But for only $1, no commitment, cancel anytime, free shipping, you get the Executive Razor. I've used it. It's good for travel as well with core cartridges. Again, DollarShaveClub.com/Pat. Check it out. And that's it for this edition of the Not So Common Podcast. Please subscribe on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Please like, thumbs up the podcast, leave a comment, what you enjoy, what you didn't enjoy. Hey, I can take it. Finally, if you want to support me and my endeavors here in the YouTube and podcast radio land, check out patreon.com/PatContry. I appreciate it. Thanks. We'll see you next time.